Blog Talk Radio.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Allahu Akbar, Allah.
With liberty and justice for all, hello Radio Jihadists, you're back with ACT Radio Jihad, the patriotic resistance movement. I'm Vito Esposito, and thank you for joining us tonight. Our call-in number is 1-347-857-1380. That's 347-857-1380. Joining me this evening is that no-pork-eating-America-lover, Alan Kay.
Wassalam alechem, Israel and America Akbar.
Oh, salami and cheese to you and Israel and America Akbar. And we have our resident Islamic scholar, Andy Kay. Andy, how you doing?
Salam. I'm doing good. How are you?
Salami and cheese to you. Speaking of food, guys, got this story out of Kentucky Fried Chicken ditches halal-only menu after poor sales. They said they were switching to the halal menu to satisfy demand. Right, get that, satisfy demand. But didn't turn out to be the much demand after all. Dimitu doesn't pay. KFC forced to ditch halal-only menus after disappointing sales. KFC scrapped its policy of serving halal food only in some of its takeaways following customer protests. 100 of the fast food chains removed non-halal items from their menu last year in an attempt to attract Muslim customers. But thousands of regular customers complained, including Alan Phillips, who was furious when the Burton on Trent Branch refused to serve his favorite Big Daddy chicken burger with bacon and cheese topping. He was told it was forbidden to keep bacon on the same premises as halal meat, and he would have to travel 5 miles to the nearest non-halal restaurant. Now KFC has admitted five of its outlets, including Burton, are converting to standard menus following poor sales. A spokesman for KFC blamed low demand. We introduced our trial in areas where we expected a large demand for halal restaurants, and as with any trial, we continually evaluate results and adapt as necessary. Huh. I guess they got.
So what were they chick? Were they chicken to continue serving halal chicken?
Yeah. Well, it says there are always areas which are more successful than others, and despite positive feedback, a few stores haven't met our forecast. So for that reason, we've decided to stop trialing halal in 5 restaurants as of July 19th. Huh.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. All, thank you. All pork products are forbidden by Muslim law, so participating outlets have to take them off the menu. In March, Mr. Phillips, who was refused a Big Daddy burger in Burton, said the policy was extremely unfair on non-Muslim customers. It was like they were saying, I couldn't buy bacon because it might offend people. Is this creeping Sharia?
Actually, I think it's a good sign.
I have to agree with you, Andy.
I think this is a great sign because, you know, we talk about a lot of times in here about the effects of creeping Sharia and the influence of Sharia law and Islamic law in our society as well as in the West in general. And what this shows is that there isn't as much demand as there is perceived. You know, we hear about Islam as the fastest growing religion. Muslims need these special accommodations. We have to listen to this or listen to that because of Islamic law. Well, this really shows that, you know, in the business world, there's a saying, money talks, and people are not spending the money. And if there was such a huge Muslim demand, or demand in general for halal meats, then you would be seeing a burger KFC promoting it in other restaurants as well. If they're going to turn off halal meat from 100 restaurants, I believe was the number you mentioned, that says something. It means it's not selling. And if it's not selling, they're losing money. So they're not going to continue to accommodate that. They can't. It's not profitable for them. And second, it just shows that this that there are more people who are against Islamic law, and better yet, for the freedoms and the laws and the systems we have in the West, then there are those who are in favor of Islamic law.
Ah, you make a rational point in that. I mean, here you have a guy, a customer who goes there who was denied his bacon burger with cheese because bacon can't be in the same room as halal food. And, you know, this is favoring one religion over all others, so they've inconvenienced Americans. They've inconvenienced their own restaurant customers. And for what? You know, to make a point that, oh, well, we can be politically correct? Well, if you're politically correct, you know, it's like vegetarians. Vegetarians can go to any restaurant and eat anything. They don't have to, but they're not turned off because there's a hamburger that's being served. They'll find something else to eat.
Yeah, and even if a vegetarian doesn't really is insistent about having no meat, there are vegetarian restaurants that you can go to who accommodate that. I know very well. I have good friends who are vegetarians. And it's not an insult. That's the way our system works. So in this case, you know, it just shows that as much as there is complaining from many of the leaders of the Muslim communities within the West to try and push for Sharia law in forms such as this, it also shows that there is, one, an equal pushback. And second, it also shows that the demand that is claimed and the voice that is being presented, it's much weaker than it seems to be. You know, I remember one time I listened to Imam Siraj Wahaj, whom we have mentioned on the show before, and he said specifically, and this is to a large group of Muslims gathered at a conference, that Muslims need to have a loud voice and to continually press and use that loud voice to advocate for change in society. Well, this shows that you can have a loud voice and you can press for change, but if your voice does not represent the will of the people, simply the will and the laws of society, eventually it's not always going to go through. And this is a great case where it shows this exact thing happening.
Yep. Our laws in society don't mean anything to Islamists. That's the other thing.
Now, wasn't Siraj Wahaj, wasn't he the one of the unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial?
I believe it was the 19... He may have been involved in that. I know that he was involved as an unindicted co-conspirator by the federal government. That's what he was listed as in the 1993 World Trade Center bombings.
Correct.
He's also a very well-known Muslim speaker and very well-known advocate of Orthodox Islam. He's also an African-American convert. So if I remember correctly, I may not remember, he may have been one of the ones who was advocating for things such as this, but I cannot remember exactly. So
Personal testimony for the blind sheikh.
Yes, personal testimony for the blind sheikh.
Well, speaking of Sharia law, while Americans were sleeping, the Obama administration has announced its appointment of 13 White House fellows, and the first person featured on the short list is a Muslim attorney who specializes in Sharia-compliant transactions. This year's White House fellows are comprised of some of the best and brightest leaders in our country, said the beast, Michelle Obama. I'm sure she can finally be proud of America. I applaud their unyielding commitment to public service and dedication to serving the community. White House fellows spend a year as full-time paid assistants to senior White House staff, the vice president, cabinet secretaries, and senior administration officials. So, ladies and gentlemen, our tax dollars now are paying for White House fellows. And this particular fellow, not a man, but a fellow, Samar Ali of Waverly, Tennessee, is the first name appearing on the White House list. She's an associate with the law firm Hogan Lovells, a firm that claims to have advised on more than 200 Islamic finance transactions with an aggregate deal value in excess of $40 billion. According to Ali's biography posted on White House website, she's responsible for counseling clients on mergers and acquisitions, cross-border transactions, Sharia-compliant transactions, project finance, and international business matters. During her time with Hogan Lovells, the law firm, she's been a founding member of the firm's Abu Dhabi office. Hogan Lovells lists Ali's experience as advising a Middle Eastern university in the potential establishment of a foreign aid conventional and Sharia-compliant student loan program and advising Middle Eastern client in relations to a U.S. government subcontract matter. So I guess the separation of church and state only applied to nativity scenes on courthouse lawns or referencing the Ten Commandments or school prayer if you're outside of the Dearborn, Michigan area. Isn't this a favor of one religion over another, which is against the United States Constitution?
I would say it goes something even deeper within that context, and that is the favoring of, within that religion, the legal system that follows it in that context. You know, in the case of Sharia laws, you've talked about, and Alan has mentioned many times, Sharia law, the cultural and social relation system of Islam, and the theological aspects of Islam are inseparable from each other. They are all one. You cannot break one piece off from the other, and you cannot divide them up. It's a complete package. As Muslims will say, it's a complete way of life, and that's very accurate. In the case of Sharia law, anytime you follow by the standards of Sharia law, these standards are based off the sayings of Muhammad, and they're based off the theological teachings that Muhammad gives, namely that any kind of interest as riba, as they call it, that anything that involves interest is not permitted because Allah has forbidden it. It's a theological concept. So yes, in that extent, it is a favoring of a certain kind of religion over another. It's also more dangerous. It's also very dangerous within the context of society, because once you start to favor the system, if you're going to judge, if you're going to allow Sharia financing or Sharia law of any sort to be used, well, if there is a matter of dispute or something that needs to go into arbitration, how do you judge it? How do you analyze it? Do you use an analysis or a judging means that is the one that is recognized by society, in other words, the laws of society? Well, under Islamic law, you cannot do that. You have to use an Islamic system, which is, once again, based on Islamic law and Islamic theology. So what you end up doing is, whether it's finance, whether it's legal transactions, whatever, one step inevitably leads to the other. If you do any kind of Sharia-compliant financing or business transactions, you have to have a Sharia-compliant or Islamically permissible means of regulating it and resolving disputes. And that naturally leads to the development of a Sharia court system. And even though it may be just for business, if it is used for business, there is nothing that can stop that from being used for civil matters or for criminal matters. And this is what happened in England. This is how it came into England and Western Europe. It started off as something used for business matters and for finance transactions. And eventually, it made the natural and inevitable progression from finance to the civil to the criminal. And now, as you have mentioned, Vito, we have how many Sharia courts in England? 85? 85 courts. In how much time? In a very short time. What, less than 10 years?
Less than a year.
Less than a year.
October 2008, so you're talking about a year and 4 months. 85.
Okay.
It started out with four Sharia courts, and we're up to 85 in less than a year.
So 16 months this happened.
Yes.
It happens almost instantly, as you said, and it's a natural and inevitable progression. And before that, England was involved in Sharia finance transactions, and the banks were. So this is well known. It's just a natural progress. It's not that you can prevent this from happening. It will happen if it is allowed to happen, because you're using two completely different standards of reference. If you're using business transactions that are based on American law or some kind of foreign law, your reference is that foreign law, and your means of settling disputes or figuring out any other necessary interactions come from that law. In the case of Islam, if you are using Islamic law and the Islamic theological system, well, it has any kind of means of resolving disputes or any other necessary decisions that have to be made, they have to come out of that if they are to be Islamically compliant. So there is no way around this. It's a question of when, not if it is used.
Well,
now, for our listeners who are wondering, what the heck is this Sharia law? It's really called, Sharia is Islam, it's called Islamic banking, and it refers to a system of banking or banking activity that is consistent with the principles of Islamic law, which is Sharia. So when you think of Sharia, it's Islamic law. And its practical application, though, the development of Islamic economics. Sharia or Islamic law prohibits the payment or acceptance of interest fees for the lending and accepting of money, respectively, which is riba or usury that Andrew was talking about. Now, for specific terms, as well as investing in businesses that provide goods or services considered contrary to its principles, which is called haram. That would be like pork and alcohol, beer, fun, anything that's a good time, baseball teams, football teams, can't invest in that. So that is what Andrew's saying, is that it follows Islamic law to a T. Now, what's really weird about Sharia law is that they say that there's no interest fees, but all they do is they use another word for interest fees, but they still charge interest. They just call it a different name,
sort of like
temporary marriages. In Islam, they have what's known as temporary marriages, where a Muslim man can have a temporary marriage with a woman for 1 hour or 2 hours or up to 3 days. In the West, we call that getting a hooker. Same thing with Sharia banking or Islamic banking. It's all a big lie.
If you don't mind me, Alan, I'd like to just go into, for our listeners, about how this works and how the interest is, how the, quote, interest is not, quote, not paid when indeed it actually is.
Andrew,
the way it works is in the case of the one.
Let me introduce. We have Gotti on the line, so I just want to say hello to Gotti.
Not a problem.
Hello, everybody, fellow infidels. Just a quick minute. I actually snuck out of job to call and say hello and hear Andrew's voice and say hi to everybody.
Oh, my Gotti.
I've
got to get back in my store, but I'll definitely be on tomorrow night, guys. So I appreciate you cutting in there because I've got to actually get back.
Okay.
All right, we're going to put your article up on the website. We'll talk about it in depth tomorrow.
Wonderful. You guys have a great night, and thanks again.
Thanks,
well, be
Gotti.
Safe, Gotti. Okay, sorry, Andrew. Go
now
ahead.
You're going to go into the basics of interest.
Oh, please don't worry about it. But yeah,
No. I find it interesting.
Oh, not a worry. The basics of interest is, in the West, what we do is, in other words, if I take out a loan, let's say $100,000 to buy a house, what I do is I own that house, and I pay the bank back their money, and I pay them a fixed percentage that's calculated and compounded over any number of months or years, however it's set up. The Islamic banking position works the exact opposite way. If I take out a $100,000 loan to buy a house, but I don't actually own the house. You see, in the case with our system where we have interest, I actually will, even though I may not have paid off all the debt that is due to what I have, I technically own it under the terms of the law. In the case of the Islamic system, as long as I have a Sharia-compliant loan, I do not actually own what I have. The bank owns it. And what I do is I pay the bank back their money, plus I pay them a percentage, an additional percentage back. And that is calculated and can be even compounded upon a monthly or yearly or based on market fluctuations. Either way, it's the exact same system that we have. It is still a form of interest. The only difference is it is not paid out directly. It's done indirectly, but the same amount of money is taken, and it's the same process. But from a legal perspective, any kind of Sharia loan is much more risky or dangerous than the kind that we have in the West, because in spite of the criticisms that are said about our system, in which there are many, and there are many faults in what we have as seen by many of the credit and banking crises that we have today, the biggest danger of Islamic financing is that you do not actually legally possess what you have. Therefore, at any time, the bank can legally repossess, or the creditor can legally repossess what you have at any moment, because you do not actually own it. It is actually theirs. it is true that when you own a house in the West, you do not actually own your house. You do not officially own your house until your entire debt is paid off. However, at the same time, from a legal perspective, from the view of the law, if there was a matter that had to be taken to court, you are legally protected in as much as your house is, because you own your house. In an Islamic system, you are actually not protected. You have less protection because the bank owns your house, not you.
So,
and that can go for anything else.
All right. So now I'm sitting on the outside. I'm listening to this. I'm going, well, why would the federal government adopt or endorse this type of crazy activity?
Very easy, in my opinion. Somebody thinks that they can make a lot of money off of it. Look at this law firm, this Hogan and something else. This woman, the biography you read earlier, correct?
Right. Let's bring our losses back here. The lady's name is Samar Ali, she works for Hogan Lovells Law Firm.
Hogan Lovells. Okay. It said that this woman, Miss Ali, has helped this firm with over $40 billion worth of quote Sharia compliant transactions. Now, how much of a cut has the law firm gotten from all these transactions? How much of a cut? They've obviously made some money off of this, and there's enough money that they have made that they see a vested interest for themselves in propagating it. It's not really about what is good for the people or what is good for society at large. It is about what makes money. And in this case, it does generate revenue, and it might generate significant revenue for a certain portion of the population. However, the long-term implications that it has for society as a whole, both financially, legally, and culturally, are much more significant in the long run.
You know, I'll tell you something. I've read this, and I'll read a little bit more of this article for our listeners, which this article appeared in World Net Daily. But I've been reading the United States Constitution. And if you say, well, why? Well, I'm looking at Article 2, Section 1, Paragraph 8. Before the president enters office, on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. What this man has done, Barack Hussein Obama, he is not protected, he's not preserving, and I dare to say he's not defending the Constitution of the United States by allowing the promotion of Sharia law or Sharia-compliant loans or any type of Islamic law, with the appointment of 30-plus Islamists within his White House, and now with the latest appointment of this Samar Ali to oversee Sharia-compliant loan programs. I really have a hard time understanding and question whether or not that this president is faithfully executing the job of the president in order to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, because Sharia law, Islamic law, seeks to undermine man-made law, which is the United States Constitution. We already have a quote on record from the Council on American Islamic Relations co-founder, Omar Ahmad, who said that Islam is not in America to be equal but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam the only accepted religion on earth. Now, we already know what their motive is, but we have a president today in 2010 who is appointing more and more Islamists in the White House, in the Department of Defense, in order to bring in more Islamic law, and they call it creeping Sharia, you can call it whatever you want. But now we have Islamic banking. And Andrew, as you said not more than 5 minutes ago, you have Islamic law, which is all-encompassing. It's a political and a religious doctrine. There is no separation of church and state. And we have a president of the United States who's adopting these principles that absolutely go diametrically opposed to the United States Constitution. And it's an outrage.
Oh, you're outraged. Now, there's one component of this we haven't talked about with the Islamic banking, is that 10% of whatever revenue is in supposedly the Islamic Bank must go to charity. Now, these charities usually go for the furtherment of Islam through jihad.
10%?
10%. Is that correct, Andrew?
It varies depending on the institution. It might be 10% for banks. I can't verify that offhand right now, but I can tell you that this is what's called under Islamic law zakat. It's one of the, quote, five pillars of Islam. In other words, it's the pillar of charity. Every Muslim individual is required to give 2.5% of his income every year to charity of some kind. Many times this will go to something that is done fi sabilillah, for the cause of Allah. And the cause of Allah is very broad. And historically, it often means going for jihad or for the spread and propagation of Islam, specifically to non-Muslim lands. Now, the amount of zakat has to be given varies once you get outside of people. It depends on profession or institutions. Some institutions, such as mines, it might be banks, but I know for sure mines have to give up to 20% of their gross revenue to zakat. Now that is what is, keep in mind, that is what is required under Islamic law. That is mandatory. After that, there is a second kind of charity that you can give. It's called sadaqah. It corresponds to the Hebrew tzedakah, which means a charitable charity or charitable giving. And once again, tzedakah can be either used for jihad or can be used for a more benevolent social outreach projects. But yes, it is very true that it is very common for zakat revenue, Islamic charitable revenue given to the Muslim state or to the Muslim community, to be used for jihad and jihad promotion.
Now, American banking in comparison is very, very easy. A bank like Bank of America or any other bank, you borrow $100,000 from them, they make money on whatever the interest rate is. It's a simple transaction. But with Islamic banking or Sharia banking, let's see, we learned about fees, which Karen in our chat room, she said they're called cleansing fees. So you have an arbitrary fee. You've got a percentage anywhere from 10 to possibly 20% going to charity automatically. So you have those fees and 20% taken off the top. There is no way that this organization can make money and survive. Just looking at it from a business perspective and take all the Islam angle out of it, I don't see how it can be a money-making venture.
So who's funding them then?
Well, that's where you get in the million-dollar question, is who's promoting this, and that would be the state is in control of it, an Islamic state. So it would be like the United States of America controlling the banking, whereas now it's private. So now you're talking about a totalitarian regime that would handle Islamic banking as well. So it's totally incompatible with the United States of America, the way that we conduct business.
Well, you know, this article also goes on to say that Islamic finance is a system of banking consistent with the principles of Sharia or Islamic law. Well, if you have the federal government now is endorsing basically one religion over any and all other religions in the United States. And whether you're a Wiccan, whether you're a Buddhist, whether you're an atheist, we have the atheist filing suit in the California Court of Appeals to remove In God, the God from In God We Trust, off of our currency, or One Nation Under God, under the Pledge of Allegiance. And now you have the federal government, under the direction of Barack Hussein Obama, having Sharia law being part of the American culture. That's endorsing one religion over another. There is no separation of church and state between Islam in the religious side of it, and on the political ideology side, however they want to masquerade it.
And that's part of the problem, is because the two are inseparable. You cannot say that Islam is political alone, and you cannot say that it is just religious alone. Because as soon as you admit that there, as much as I come here and I speak about the theology of Islam, whenever I speak about this theology, I inevitably am referring to, indirectly obviously, but I am inevitably referring to the political system that comes with Islam. And likewise, Alan, whenever you speak about the politics, you naturally, although you may not talk about the religion explicitly, it naturally comes into play because the two are inseparable. It is impossible to separate them because they spring out of orthodox Islamic dogma.
Well, Sheikh Obama is perpetrating the biggest ruse on the American people, and this person that he has appointed, this Samar Ali of Waverly, Tennessee. This needs to be analyzed, and we want your opinion on this, Andrew. She spoke out on a campus memorial service days after September 11 attacks. In my opinion, Al-Qaeda is trying to ruin Islam's reputation, and we are simply not going to let them win this fight. If someone has a political agenda, they need to call it what it is and not disguise it in the name of religion or use the religion to achieve their political goals. This is simply unacceptable. Well, that's what Islam is.
It's kind of funny that she mentions the term trying to ruin Islam's reputation as a religion because, frankly, you know, from my work in Islamic theology, I can tell you that Islam does a plenty good job on its own theologians. Muhammad himself, in his own writings, as narrated by the Orthodox Islamic historians and theologians and teachers and imams and fuqaha and all the intellectuals, the ulama, they do a plenty good job of presenting Islam in a negative and a not good light. And that's just based on its own teachings as it teaches to its own people. It doesn't really need anybody else to do anything else. Most people who do these things, they are not actually, I would say, you know, shaming Islam or making it look bad. They're simply following what the religion teaches per its own orthodox dogma. It's just the difference is they actually carry it out, whereas some people, they may think about it or maybe not care about it, but they don't actually live it. And that's the difference.
Well, I need to make a correction. Our resident scholar, Islamic scholar in our chat room, Karen O, who's a regular, informs me that the percentage for the charities is anywhere from 3% to 9%, and it does vary, or it's massaged regularly. It's very fluid. So that charity percentage was wrong. It's 3% to 9%. Thank you, Karen.
Oh yeah, 3% to 9%. That doesn't surprise me for the other things. I know that for mines, it's 20%. But I'm glad she corrected about the banks. I'm glad because I was not sure about that.
So $40 billion times 9%. So they got what, $360 million? That's pretty damn good.
Yeah. Well, shoot, I used to trade money, and that's what I did for a living for a number of years. So for that investment, you're taking 9% off the top, add another 5% on for fees and graft. So let's say that's 6%. You're looking at 15% of every dollar that needs to be made up in investment income or appreciation just to break even. And you tell me how many investments are making 15% a year and more than that, just to be profitable.
Yeah, that's almost impossible.
Yeah,
he is smiling, huh?
It's crazy.
In my opinion, from what I've seen, the only things that actually produce revenue that high would be like food products. It's like certain kinds of food products, or like coffee or tea or consumable things. But if you're talking about actual commodities, things such as like metals, raw materials, things that are used, tools, things that are used to build society. As you said, it's impossible. And I'm not even an economist. I'm just speaking as one who's read about this. I'm sure you could speak much more eloquently to this, Alan.
No, you did just fine. You nailed it on the head.
Let me read a quote from Vice President Christopher Holton of the Center of Security Policy, who wrote, "America is losing the financial war on terror because Wall Street is embracing a subversive enemy ideology on one hand and providing corporate life support to state sponsors of terrorism on the other hand." Holton referred to Islamic finance or Sharia-compliant finance as a modern-day Trojan horse infiltrating the United States. He said it poses a threat to the U.S. because it seeks to legitimize Sharia, a man-made medieval doctrine that regulates every aspect of life for Muslims and can ultimately change American life and laws. This man gets it. Subversive. He said, what the heck? America is losing. Wall Street is embracing a subversive enemy ideology on one hand and providing corporate life support to state sponsors of terrorism on the other hand. This woman, who is making a boatload of money, I'm sure, at Hogan and Lovell, now takes a pissant White House fellow job. She was hailed as dealing in excess of $40 billion, 200 financial transactions. Why in the world would she leave such a prominent job to become a White House fellow to incorporate Sharia law if it wasn't for Christopher Holton's comment that said this is it's a subversive enemy ideology on one hand and providing corporate life support to state sponsors of terrorism on the other hand? Alan, you hit it on the head. God almighty. While America slept, that's what this is.
Yeah, what he said, you know, I see absolutely no conflict with that. It's completely accurate. I mean, it's completely accurate. That is the case with Sharia financing. It is what
it is.
Well,
and I thought Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were bad news. They're looking really good right now.
Yeah, right. Well, and let's remind our listeners about the tenets of Sharia. Now, this is Islamic finance or financing Islamism. Alex Alexiev outlined the following tenets of Sharia taken from The Reliance of Traveler, the classic manual for sacred law. Let's remind what Sharia law is, ladies and gentlemen. A woman is eligible only half of the inheritance of a man. A virgin may be married against her will by her father or grandfather. A woman may not leave the house without her husband's permission. A Muslim man may marry four women, including Christians and Jews. A Muslim woman can only marry a Muslim. Beating an insubordinate wife is permissible. Female sexual mutilation is obligatory. Adultery is punished by death by stoning. Offensive military jihad against non-Muslim is a religious obligation. Apostasy from Islam is punishable by death without trial. And lying to infidels in time of jihad is permissible. And boy, I'll tell you what, that last tenet, lying to infidels in the time of jihad is permissible, we are experiencing that firsthand in the United States today. It's called a camouflage. They are hoodwinking the American people. They're falsifying their intentions. Now, I'll tell you what, this whole Sharia banking and this woman who's now been appointed, Samar Ali, to a fellow position in the White House, give me a break. What? How much are they paying it? Why would she leave a very high six-figure job to become a fellow in the White House? What's the reason behind it?
She's becoming a fellow?
I guess she's a gay. I don't know.
Well, once you're in that White House, it's Chicago politics. Chicago politics is grab what you can. I used to live up there. Is grab what you can, as much as you can, and you got a Blagojevich as a result of it.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that Islamists are grabbing all they can because they are certainly emboldened by Sheikh Obama. I mean, you have 30-plus Islamists that are in the White House as interns and serving in other capacities, like the Organization of Islamic Council. There's that radical Sharia-endorsed individual. Now you have this other Sharia issue, Samar Ali, and now our banking and institutions inside the United States is going to be Sharia-compliant. The modern-day Trojan horse infiltrating the United States.
Yeah, the guy in the OIC, that's Rashad Hussein, and he was just recently quoted as saying that President Obama is the educator-in-chief of Islam. The educator-in-chief of Islam.
What do you take that to mean, Al?
That means whatever you want it to mean.
I dare not speculate. As I would say, Vito, I think that just like a lot of Islamic theology, Islam always has said, and I've always said Islam speaks in a way that is very direct and meant to be easily understood. It is what it is.
Well, I'll tell you what it is, what it is. Article 2 of the United States Constitution, Section 1, Paragraph 8. I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. I do not believe that this man is now protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States. From illegal immigration now to Sharia compliant, where he's adopting and he's endorsing one religion over all other religions in the United States. He's proclaimed that the United States is no longer a Judeo-Christian country. How dare he? How dare he? The Founding Fathers made it clear what their intentions were. There's a separation of church and state. Now, it's not written. It is an implied separation of church and state. And certainly within the last 60 years, the United States Supreme Court has ruled in many decisions separating church and state. And along comes Sheikh Obama with his Islamic background, and along comes Sharia law. There is no separation of church and state between in Islam, and yet they are getting a pass. They're getting a pass at every avenue, from Hezbollah High in Dearborn, Michigan, Fortune High School, that they allow prayer at a public school five times a day, Islamic prayer, down to Santa Rosa County Education was sued by the ACLU for having a prayer led before a football game, a Christian prayer. The ACLU, what do? They went ahead and filed suit against Santa Rosa County for allowing that school prayer to occur. And they won. And the school district paid almost $1 million to defend itself. And yet we have in Fortune High School in Dearborn, Michigan, they're allowed Islamic prayer five times a day, led by an Islamic principal. Now, where the hell is the President of the United States protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States? This bozo was supposed to be this great leader of the or a great intellect of the United States Constitution when he was at Harvard. He's nothing but a horse's ass.
And where's the ACLU?
Exactly.
Why are they allowing accommodations to one group over another?
Because, Al, they're bought off by the Saudis. You know that. They protect the Council on American Islamic Relations over regular Americans who are law-abiding, America-loving individuals who follow the United States Constitution. The ACLU, they sold themselves out. They're prostituting themselves to the Saudi Arabians for that almighty dollar.
And that runs deep, too, into a lot of other areas of government. So it is a big concern.
Sure it is. I mean, you have the Three Stooges that are leading the Department of Defense. You have Robert Gates, Gordon England, and Hesham Islam. Look what they're doing to our men and women serving in the United States military. The policy that has come out of the Sheikh Obama administration for our men and women, our brave men and women fighting to protect and defend the Constitution in Afghanistan. You know what? You better not patrol at areas where you may have to have a lethal fight. What? This is war. Well, we're afraid civilians might get killed. Well, God damn it, this is war. They inflicted damage. They inflicted pain on the American people. You have Al-Qaeda who hides behind women and children to kill American soldiers. You have a directive by Admiral Awlaki, that radical Yemen fundamental orthodox imam out of Yemen, who says it's okay to kill United States soldiers. And now the directive has been expanded. It's okay to kill Americans. And you send our men and women to the battlefield to say that you have to be careful where you go so you don't engage in any type of lethal fighting? This is nuts.
Well, what's even worse is now that in Afghanistan, the Afghanistan government has brought the Taliban to the table. So they're actually having negotiations with the Taliban, our allies, the Afghan government, against Al-Qaeda as allying with the Taliban. And this is the same Taliban that hung a five-year-old boy last week for supposedly stealing a loaf of bread or for some other minor offense.
What? They hung a five-year-old?
They hung a five or seven-year-old, I think.
Yeah, a small child.
What about the human rights? I mean, we have China that's bitching about the human rights because Arizona passed basically what the federal law should have done on illegal immigration. And you're telling me in Afghanistan the Taliban hung a seven-year-old for stealing a loaf of bread?
Get a load of this. Qazi Nazir Ahmad, he's a lawmaker from the Herat section of Afghanistan, said killing a converted Muslim was not a crime because converting from Islam to any other religion is punishable by death under Afghan law. And over 20 Afghan Christians have been detained in Afghanistan after high-level leaders call for the arrest and execution of converts to Christianity.
That's a violation of human rights. Where's the United Nations on this? Where's the Organization of Islamic Council? Where is Sheikh Obama? Where is the outrage over this? You're killing innocent people over a religion? And then you're enforcing Sharia-compliant programs within the United States of America?
This is Sharia law.
Thank you.
If you Google Afghan Constitution, you'll read that in Afghanistan is an Islamic state, and Sharia law is the law of the land, particularly the Hanafi school of Islamic law. That's what we're fighting for over there to protect.
Now, I should also mention too. Keep in mind the Hanafi school is that's the liberal school. That's what's often called the liberal school in Islam. That's not even the most orthodox school. The most orthodox one is the Hanbali, which is practiced in Saudi Arabia.
Is that the Wahhabi? Is that a form of Wahhabism?
Wahhabism is actually a form of Hanbalism. It's Hanbalism mixed with Saudi Arabian nationalism. But yes, it is a form of Hanbalism.
Oh, so liberal Sharia means that a woman can show her wrists out in public?
Hey, it is what it is.
So burkini, they're going to have burkini Miss Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Burkini burqa competitions. Miss Afghanistan.
As I say, Alan, I didn't invent Islam. I just study it.
I heard you did.
Really?
You invented Islam.
Really?
I'm not that creative.
I also don't have the same inclinations that Muhammad had as recorded in the Orthodox doctrines of Islamic history.
Well, that's good. That's why we like you.
That's why I like myself. Thank you.
Oh, I love you. Oh, I love you.
I can't get over this. I can't get over the fact that they hung a seven-year-old, and there's no outrage by the world. There's no outrage and condemnation by the United Nations. They're more concerned about the Israeli blockade and flotillas than they are about the human rights violation by the Taliban.
I'll tell you exactly why, Vito, is that it's Muslim-on-Muslim violence, and that is okay. But if an American should even touch a Muslim, then it's a crime against Islam.
Yeah, but Alan, wait a minute. You were going to talk about Muslim-on-Muslim violence, but you're talking about a policy. You're talking about a doctrine that's set up, a political doctrine that's based on religion and vice versa. And then you have the world who's out there, like China, who condemns a policy within a sovereign state of the United States of America, Arizona's immigration policy. China has the balls to condemn the Arizona law, which, out of those 10 pages, 9 pages follow the federal law to a T. They're enforcing a law that this government, our federal government, refuses to enforce. And you have a condemnation made by the Chinese, and yet you have the taking of a life of a human being, of a child, in a pissant country of Afghanistan where human rights mean nothing. And you mean to tell me that the United Nations, that the United States of America doesn't condemn this act? We're fighting for liberty and freedom to give those people democracy, to win over their hearts and their minds, as Sheikh Obama likes to say, and as George Bush liked to say. And now they're killing seven-year-olds over taking a loaf of bread?
Yep, well, that's the big lie, is we're not giving them democracy. We're not even over there attempting to nation build. If we were truly nation building, we'd have flattened that place, just like what happened in World War II. We flattened Germany, rose it up in our image. But in Afghanistan, we are just there basically doing a police action, in my opinion, because the Afghanistan Constitution has Sharia law as the law of the land.
And great men, great military people, like Lieutenant Colonel Michael Chassani, wouldn't have lost his commission over saving his men after being ambushed by terrorists, by Islamic scumbags who they call, quote, insurgents, who falsify reports. And you have these men putting their lives on the line for what now? For what? What does it come down to? Are we there? Are we really there to protect and defend? And how can you protect and defend nations like Iraq and Afghanistan, who base their entire constitution on Sharia law and will not bend, and that we're allowing the opium to be and heroin products to be sent out? Now we're allowing the Taliban to come to the table, and now we're watching as people are getting slaughtered because of their religion or because they stole a loaf of bread. They kill a 17-year-old kid, or a 7-year-old kid. That is a disgrace, and you know what? This is it's all hypocrisy why we're there now. I love our military. I love what our men and women are doing, and they have the ability to volunteer to put their lives on the line to protect and defend the country, and to allow me and you and Andy to voice our opinions in a free society. But God damn it, what they're doing to our kids during a time of war is a travesty. And certainly people like General George S. Patton would never have stood for the military to conduct themselves in this fashion that's led by Robert Gates, by Gordon English, and by Hesham Islam in the Department of Defense. It stinks to high heaven. Okay.
No, I agree with you. You said it. That's what it is.
Hey, we have a caller from New Zealand, Arizona?
Nope, Butch from New Zealand.
New Zealand, from down under. We got to talk to. Hi, mate. How are you?
Doing well. I'm actually from Memphis, Tennessee, but I'm in New Zealand right now. Yes.
Well, welcome to Radio Jihad. What's on your mind tonight, Butch?
Well, I just heard what you guys were saying about China saying something about the Arizona law and not saying anything about the Muslims killing that 7-year-old. And it's actually pretty simple. You take it down to, you know, just think about yourself. If you were somebody who always had to tell your opinion of what somebody else was doing or what have you, who are you going to say it to? The one who is just going to argue back with you and maybe, you know, thumb their nose at you? Or are you going to say something to someone that if you did come and kill your family? And that's the difference. You've got Muslims. Everyone knows what they'll do. They'll come and send a suicide bomber to blow up a train station or what have you. So no one wants to upset them or offend them. And the only way we're going to put a stop to them is to go to war with them like we did with Japan and Germany and just annihilate them. There can't be this little pussyfooting around like we did in Vietnam, which is what we're doing. We have another Vietnam in Afghanistan right now.
Yeah, great point. That is an excellent point. You know, the fact that no one really will listen to Afghanistan, but, you know, you go ahead and you hit the United States with human rights violations, then the world takes notice. But who's going to worry about a pissant country like Afghanistan that really has no respect for anybody, including themselves?
Well, to that,
and there's another problem. The other problem is I think we Americans have become numb to other people's problems. The Gulf of Mexico is a perfect talk to people on Blog Talk Radio about that. And if they're not around that area, they're not really that interested. It's not that big a deal. It's not that big a crisis. And that's a really big problem. You know, we are not really seeing the situation. The only time it's really going to be an issue is if there's a dirty bomb that's blown up somewhere in America. And really, if it's on the East Coast where it's done, the West Coast probably is not going to worry about it because it didn't affect them in their minds. And that's a real problem.
The World Trade Center woke up Americans for about 6 months, and then everybody went back to sleep. So, yeah, you've got a very good point there, Butch, and it's sad. That's why shows like ours are on the air, is to reach people, get them fired up, and teach them the facts of what's going on in the world.
And Butch, if you wouldn't mind me adding to what you said about money, people are afraid because they know Muslims will do something. I should like to add to that that is one of the great strengths that many people do not actually realize that exists in the West, is that when it comes to dealing with Islam, when Islam is confronted, and when it is confronted persistently and with a consistent message, they do back down historically. This was the reason why, in the case of Lebanon, why the Maronites were always able to maintain their political and religious independence when all the other Middle Eastern Christians and peoples did not, because the Maronites had a strong identity, and when Islam did come to challenge them, and many times throughout history they did, they stood in their identity as Maronites, as Maronite Christians, Maronite Catholics specifically, and they did what they had to do militarily and politically to protect themselves. And in that case, Islam did back down, and many people actually over time throughout history ended up converting. They became Maronites. They became Maronite Catholics and left Islam because of this reason. So the greatest strength that Islam has is our fear of confronting them for fear of getting hurt. If we do confront them persistently and consistently and with the same message and intentions, these things do stop, or they at least mitigate and they become less frequent.
And that's all well and good, but when we send the military in, the military has one goal in mind, it should be, and that is to destroy the enemy. And that's it. None of these, hey, here's the way that you do this or whatever, and you can only fire here, this, whatever. No, that caused us to lose Vietnam.
Exactly.
And that's what emboldened all these other countries to do what they're doing today. We need to realize that sometimes when you put military people in the battlefield, they're to do one job, and that's to win the war. Period, the end, let the generals figure it out, and then clean up the mess afterwards.
Precisely, yep. Richard. I agree with you on that. I'm just coming at it from the historical angle, but that's the exact message. So,
well, the problem is, Butch, is that our president, they're changing the lexicon of words that you can and cannot use when describing our enemy. Like, you cannot use the word radical Islamist, jihadist. You can't even use the word caliphate. Those have been expunged from State Department memos and press releases. So we're not even defining
enough. People have had enough of that, and the last three or four elections have shown us that people are tired of putting the same old people in. Wait till November. If we can get the type of people in there it needs to be, Barack Obama's going to lose a lot of his power, and he's just going to be a lame duck president.
Right, and that's how we do things in America, is that we do it at the ballot booth when we cast a vote.
Precisely.
Come November, his shenanigans should be over. He should be just sitting there waiting on his next 2 years to be out all tired.
If not, I'm going to join you in New Zealand, Butch.
Yes.
Might be a good idea.
A little golf. Butch, thank you very much. We have less than a minute left. I want to thank you for listening to the Jihad.
Great
take
call.
Care. Be safe,
yes,
down there in New Zealand.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Wow, New Zealand. That's pretty cool. Gosh. Wow, that place looks beautiful, doesn't it? Oh. He made some great points, you know, and the problem is that the United States, and it's not the point about being aggressors and killing civilians. We see it every day in Iraq and Afghanistan, how Al-Qaeda kills civilians, 30, 40, 50, you know, car bombs, this type of bomb. They had the explosives to go off in Pakistan yesterday. I mean, they don't value life. But yet when it comes to America stepping in and trying to protect and defend the liberties and freedoms of individuals, then all of a sudden there's a concern about civilians. It's a bunch of crap. In the meantime, our men and women are getting killed in the military with the bozos in Washington, D.C., who are putting up these freaking policies and getting them killed on the front lines. It's absurd. It's asinine. It's frustrating as hell. Well, ladies and gentlemen,
amen to that.
Oh, gosh. thank you for joining us this evening. We will be back tomorrow night from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Visit our website, www.radiojihad.org. Alan, thank you. Andy K., talk to you tomorrow. We're going to talk about that lexicon issue, Al. There's a great story from ACT for America. We'll talk about that tomorrow. God bless our troops and God bless America. Radio Jihad, striving to educate America.
What do those words mean to you?
Hey, good show, huh?
Great time.
Yeah, interesting. A lot of passion.
Down under.
Yeah, Butch is a good guy. He's a good caller.
Oh, my God. It's just, you know what? And isn't it something? Here we have a guy who's he's an American, and he's in New Zealand, and he sees it. He's thinking like the majority of Americans, where this is turning into another Vietnam, which is what they said it would never do, never happen. And we have a Muslim sympathizer in the White House who's probably a Muslim himself with all the policies that are coming in, and the mentality that we cannot offend anybody, and yet we're adopting a doctrine that is oppressive, that is domineering, that wants nothing but to take over the world, including the United States of America, and it's being allowed to happen. And it's damn disgraceful, man.
Well, you know what I think it is? It's simply that we don't know how to deal with something that's supposedly 25% religion, 75% politics, because the American people look at Islam as being all religion. And you don't mess with somebody's religion, but as we've said over and over and over on the show, that Islam is nothing but politics.
Right, and you know what? Al, it's a great point, because the organizations, the fundamental Orthodox organizations, the radical organizations, so that American can understand that vernacular, the fundamental Orthodox organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Muslim Student Association, Islamic Society of North America, they all are using that First Amendment and hiding behind the religious aspect so that people don't touch it. It's almost like the black thing in America. You know, you can't criticize a black person because then, you know, if you're labeled a racist, which is very easy to do, nobody wants that label. So, you know, Islamists have figured out how to hoodwink the American people, and how these radical groups, these fundamental orthodoxy groups like CARE, Muslim Brotherhood, they figured it out to a T. It's perfect. Just perpetrate their crime by portraying everybody or everything about Islam being only religion.
A civil rights issue, too.
Correct. Yeah, there you go. Civil rights issue. Absolutely correct.
But one place we're winning is this Sharia, the banning of Sharia law in Oklahoma. That's going to be the one wedge that's going to be our saving grace, I think.
Let's
as other states start adopting that, huh?
Let's talk about a little bit more about that tomorrow. I've got a story too from the from Oklahoma on that.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that. Bring that up again. That's a good issue.
Yeah. How up to speed are you on that subject, Andrew, with that Oklahoma legislation?
Same place where you guys are.
Yeah.
Oh, not very, huh?
No.
But I think that is the one. I think that's the one thing, because my whole I've explored this thing for several years now, and the one thing that the American mind, I've said it so many times, you're probably bored by it, but the American mind can grasp politics. They won't touch religion, but if you stick to politics and Islam, they'll be able to make the connection, I think. Those are the ones who even listen or engage. 3/4 of the people in the U.S. don't know or don't care.
I don't know.
But I ramble.
No. I hear you.
Did you read Gotti's article this week?
No.
Well, we had David Wood on last week with the Apologetic 17. They went to the Dearborn Arab Festival, and they got arrested. They didn't do anything. They were just there. People were coming up to them. Well, the Muslims there told the police that they surrounded one of the Islamists there and wouldn't let him leave. They lied. Their cameras were confiscated. They got arrested. They spent the night in jail. Thomas Moore Law Center took the case. And we had him on the show, and he gave us a 45-minute interview that was powerful. And Gotti did a really good story on it this week on Florida Security Matters. So we're going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow.
Good. Yeah, that's a cool story, man. That whole, you know, and here we have a U.S. sovereign state that has infringed upon Americans' First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the freedom to peaceably assemble. It's a disgrace.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the Texas Rangers can come back like they have, we have a fighting chance, I think.
And as the Yankees did last night, down, 8-4? Baby, poof!
Yeah, I missed
man.
It. They came back and won?
Yes.
Excellent.
Fifth inning. Cano jacked a 2-run home run. Bango. And Mariano Rivera saved it in the bottom of the 10th. Boom. What more could you ask for? Bango. And the Red Sox lost another player. Yeah. Boom.
Well, you're a Red Sox fan, aren't you, Andrew?
I'm from New England, of course. But don't worry. I forgive you Yankees people. Come on. Well,
Hello?
No, I'm not worried about it, trust me. I know people go crazy over that.
Oh, well, it'll be a good show tomorrow then. We'll have Gotti back, and maybe Steve Kay will pop his head in and see what's happening.
Yeah.
Have you been on his TV show again, Andrew?
I haven't been on, but I've been talking with the guys on the TV show, and we're going to see if we can work something out.
Yeah, because he said you did a bang-up job. He said you were fantastic on it.
Yeah. I'm talking with Steve and working with him, so it's coming along really good with them.
Good. Good. We need all the voices out there we can get.
Do your best. That's all you can do.
How about our listening audience, man? New Zealand. Holy crap. I'm stoked.
Yeah, we didn't have that kind of range when we were on AM.
We couldn't even get New Guinea in.
New Smyrna.
Yeah. Now, that's really cool. It's nice. And the guy, it was nice to have a caller who really who brought up some great points and really feels the way we do. And it's there's more and more people out there. You know, we're not unique. It's just educating the people, and they do understand, and that's the thing. You know, they do understand, and yet we have this administration, we have this government who really doesn't give a crap about the U.S. Constitution nor our military. It's crazy.
And he nailed it with the instilling fear in the hearts of your enemies.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's true, because half of America, I mean, we tell our friends that we're doing the show, and they go, "What, are you crazy?" We're like, "No, they're more afraid of us speaking out."
The country runs on fear, so much of it.
It does. It's a very powerful tool, but people are starting to speak out. It's kind of like the KFC deal.
Oh, great, wasn't it?
That was cool.
Yeah, that was a little microeconomic victory of where if you stand up to it, you will prevail.
How do you take away American? I mean, KFC is like America is apple pie and Chevrolet. How do you take away someone's Kentucky Fried Chicken? I mean, that is absolutely retarded. That's dumb.
You mean halal fried chicken, Vito?
Oh yeah, sorry, Andrew. Halal fried chicken or halal brisket?
Brisket. Yeah, which is fine. I mean, you can have it, but they also try to take away bacon. On the food and any pork product that they sell along with the chicken. That's what they tried to get rid of.
Yeah, how do you do that? This doesn't make sense.
No, you make demands. You scare people into doing what you want. They're bullies.
Exactly. Exactly, they're bullies. They scare people, and look what happens to the independent franchisor who takes the step, say, oh, well, we have to appease these people. And it turns out he inconveniences the majority of Americans who don't give a crap about halal food. You want halal shit? Go over and open up a goddamn store, a halal store, okay?
Yeah.
And then cater to your people. But then to inconvenience people at a Kentucky Fried Chicken or a McDonald's to appease, what, less than 1% of the population? Give me a break.
Yeah, Neville Chamberlain tried it, and look how good it worked out for him during World War II.
It was great. Hitler loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, he got all of Czechoslovakia, didn't have to fire a bullet.
Yeah, or France.
Well, they ran away, but but those are details.
Well, gentlemen, we'll talk tomorrow.
Yes,
all right. Have a good evening, guys.
Take care.
Okay.
Andy, thank you very much, man.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Good night.
Good night.